Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward full participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI management, staff, board, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated. This is Sharon Lockhart, and I'm introducing Ebony Johnson.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Sharon. And we are here today with Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey. And we have a couple of gentlemen here, Harlan Brownlee, and Tyrone Akins, who will discuss what that program is all about. And I just heard about it not too long ago with one of our, Sue Ellen Freed, another one of our Every Woman guest, and she told me about it. So it's come full circle. Glad to have you gentlemen here. And then later we will have some members from the 10th Dimension Paranormal Group will be giving some tickets away as well. They'll be here in the second half of the show, so please stay tuned. Before we get to talk with Harlan and Tyrone, we are going to do a bit of news. In the U.S., the marketing of egg freezing as a kind of insurance policy for millennials is already in full swing. Facebook, Apple, and the U.S. military now offer egg freezing as an employee benefit. Fertility company Egg Banks estimates that by 2018, 76,000 women will have frozen their eggs. Egg Banks, which describes itself as Uber, but for egg freezing, has slogans including Smart Women Freeze and Lean In, but Freeze First, and throws Let's Chill events aimed at young women. Social circumstances have delayed a lot of things. It's not just about not having children younger, but about not having a job or a stable career younger, or not having a home, explains Angel Petropanagamos, a research associate in impact ethics at Dalhousie University in Canada, who spoke at a recent debate in the UK organized by the Progress Educational Trust, asking, "Can you put motherhood on ice?" There is all this financial and social instability that has contributed to delayed parenting, Petropanagamos continues. But one of the challenges is that in the U.S., egg freezing is really targeting a particular demographic with their advertising, upper middle class women who are already privileged. These are the kind of women whose parents and grandparents are paying for egg freezing as a graduation present. Sarah Martins da Silva, a consultant gynecologist based in Dundee, points out that social egg freezing is a personal choice, but you could argue that it actually discriminates against this younger demographic, as egg freezing needs to be self-funded and cost several thousand pounds. She refers to a report by the Center for Population Change, which details how women who remain childless largely do so because they have never wanted children or because they simply haven't met the right person yet. On that basis, I would say the target market is the 30 to 35-year-old career woman who has not met Mr. Right, she says, who recognizes that they are at risk of fertility problems as they get older and who wants to preserve better quality eggs and an option to use them in future fertility treatment. The Guardian reported July 25th. Six current or former state employees were charged Friday with misconduct and other crimes in the Flint water crisis, bringing to nine the number of public officials facing prosecution over the lead contamination, the AP reported July 29th. And on this day in 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson signs Medicare, a health insurance program for elderly Americans, into law. At the bill signing ceremony, which took place at the Truman Library in Independence, Missouri, former President Harry S. Truman was enrolled as Medicare's first beneficiary and received the first Medicare card. Johnson wanted to recognize Truman, who in 1945 had become the first president to propose national health insurance, an initiative that was opposed at the time by Congress. The Medicare program providing hospital and medical insurance for Americans age 65 or older was signed into law as an amendment to the Social Security Act of 1935. Some 19 million people enrolled in Medicare when it went into effect in 1966. And with that, we will turn to our first two guests, Mr. Harley Brownlee and Tyrone Aiken, and I will give you a brief introduction of the two gentlemen we have here with us today. Harlan Brownlee has worked for 32 years in the arts education field as a performing artist, educator, and arts administrator. He is the chief executive officer for the Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey, KCFAA. It makes dance possible, accessible to all people, teaching young people critical life skills through dance and modeling interracial and multicultural community partnerships. And Tyrone Aiken began his professional dance career with the Cleo Parker Dance Ensemble in 1983. Tyrone's choreographic credits include works for Dance Institute of Washington, Kwanzaa, performed at the Kennedy Center, Summerland, commissioned by Dance Theater of Harlem's Virginia Johnson, and works for the Alvin Ailey American Dance Center. Tyrone is the Chief Artistic Officer for the Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey. Welcome, Harlan and Tyrone, to KKFI and the Every Woman Show.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Thank you.
And I would like for our faithful listeners, we had Sue Ellen Freed here, who is a community activist and social entrepreneur, and she talked about women in prison in regarding to the Reaching Out From Within program, and she referred me to Harlan and talked to me about the Alvin Ailey program, and so we've come full circle here from her as a guest to now you as a guest. So
Sue Ellen's been a fantastic supporter for the Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey and was very much instrumental actually in helping us get started many years ago with the Ailey Camp, which is a model program that's been replicated across the country.
Wonderful. Now, I will say, especially given what we see in the mainstream media and news currently amongst races, black and white, and just all sorts of issues and issues with the police and just law enforcement and the local communities, a program like Friends of Alvin Ailey seems very salient right now. Can you talk to us just a little bit more about what the purpose and goals of the program and what you're seeing, especially as we kind of evolve as a country?
Well, there are three things that I think that make Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey relevant. And one is our mission and commitment to presenting the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. They are actually the ambassadors to the world in terms of dance, the United States ambassadors. And that means they have a voice that represents dance across a very wide spectrum. So from ballet to theater pieces, modern to ethnic African dance to hip-hop. They show the best, they showcase the best choreographic work, but also some of the best dancers from around the world that make up the dance company. And so we present Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater and Ailey 2 here in Kansas City, alternating years, but each year. Also a part of our mission is really about arts education, impacting young people, giving them the first opportunities to discover the importance that the arts play, mm-hmm. and developing one's self. So your self-identity, who you are, what you want to become, the arts play a critical role in developing some of those skills of discovery. And so mm-hmm. that's one of the things that we do through our free programming in our studio, our camp that Harlan talked about that's replicated in 10 cities across the United States, but also for many students, it's the first dance experience that they'll have in a educational setting in school will be through our modern dance programs. Mm-hmm. As important as those two programs are part of our mission, we have another part that's extremely important, and that's the commitment to diversity. Mm-hmm. So this idea is that in our mission, we're wanting to say that we're striving to be a diverse organization. That means we're looking at everything from race to religion to ethnicity to gender to sexual orientation, all of those things that make up who we are. Mm-hmm. And we're wanting to make sure that we have a place for those folks in our organization, but also to spark a dialogue. So mm-hmm. through our strategic plan in 2014, we've developed a new symposium project to really talk about the importance of race and place and diversity, mm-hmm. why it should matter for arts organizations, but also to our communities as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And we have, I would say to you, a really quite remarkable configuration and composition in terms of just our board. Mm-hmm. The organization has made a commitment over the past 32 years to have a very diverse board, and we're very, very clear about that in terms of board leadership, our committee structures. We're looking to see that we have representation from majority, minority groups, and inclusion of those groups. And that's a very important part of the organization. In fact, one of the things I think that really is a hallmark of the organization is that lots of organizations talk about the importance of diversity, and they understand that. But when you actually go to see their mm-hmm. events, or you go to mm-hmm. look at the composition of their organizations, you don't necessarily see that. Yes. Because in many ways, and it's not necessarily that they're not trying, they are. Mm-hmm. But certainly Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey is walking the walk. Mm-hmm. It is more than just talking about it. And you see that. And so when you go to see the performances, and as Tyrone said, when you go to watch the performances, like, for example, we have the Ailey performances coming up in late September, early October. When you look at those audiences, you'll see a very diverse audience as well. Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways the organization is leading and is in some ways a pioneer in the sense of being the face of the future, mm-hmm. of really representing what this country will be looking like in another 10 to 15 years. And mm-hmm. I think we're in a unique position to provide that leadership and to provide an opportunity to facilitate conversation and to lead a dialogue around race, place, and diversity.
Mm-hmm. Did you say when the Alvin Ailey Dancers first formed? In my mind, it came out of New York.
It did. So it did. The company was formed in 1958.
Wow.
By Mr. Ailey through a performance at a fabled performance at a Hebrew Jewish community center. Then from there, it grew. And in 1974, Ailey II was founded. Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey was founded as the official second home in 1984. So we're the only official second home in all of the world here in Kansas City for those companies.
Sometime in the 80s, the Alvin Ailey Dancers performed with the Kansas City Ballet under Todd
correct.
Bolinder.
Yes. Alvin and Todd were dear friends.
Do you know the year that happened? Because I was at Starlight Theater, and I was blown away by these barefoot dancers on the stage. And I must tell you, I'm not known to be really very highfalutin in the arts arena. But I like the Alvin Ailey Dancers. I could understand that. And then the ballet with the toes, not so much.
Uh-huh.
And so that's interesting. The one thing that I think Mr. Ailey speaks to is that there is something for everyone. So it's correct mm-hmm. that he and Todd Bolinder was a dancer with Balanchine. And so Alvin and Todd met in New York. When Todd came here to take over the ballet, they started exchanging ballets, and there were a number of exchanges, but there were also a number of partnerships. So they worked together on ballets like Memoria, and there were other ballets where they would exchange in terms of putting in each other's reps. But there was a way to do that, and that started in 84. And so 84, 85, 86 were years when that was happening here in Kansas City.
But I think I understand what you're saying, Sharon, in the sense that the work of Mr. Ailey and the people that he worked with, that dance was very accessible to people. Mm. People could relate to it. They could watch the individuals who were performing the dances, and there was a sense of connection with those individuals. I think sometimes in dance and sometimes even in art, we experience sometimes a bit of a disconnect as an audience. But I think as you look at what has been produced and what you see with the Ailey Dancers, is you see that connection back to perhaps everyday life, to your own personal experiences that you had. And certainly when you look at the companies now and you see them perform, you realize that you are looking at performers who are of a world class Individuals who are highly trained, but also have an incredible artistry about their work. It is a joy for me to see them perform. It is, and I find it always very, very inspiring, but also very accessible.
Mm-hmm. That is something that I'm finding out more and more now. We want to be able to really connect and relate to each other. And some of the tension that is going on is perhaps some of our miscues or not really understanding how we do relate and connect. Because a person could say, you know, well, why does a dance company want to have, like, why do you care about having a multicultural program to facilitate conversation or, you know, our community or having a diverse board? And what does that have to do with the arts? Someone may consider that. But listening to you, you know, in this conversation, it is an understanding of even something simple as movement. You know, all of our body, you know, we all move,
right,
whatever you call dance or however you interpret it. And just how we feel when we do and when we see dancers is something freeing about it. Even if you can't, even if I can't dance that well, if I see someone, you know, dance extremely well, it is something really freeing about that process. So I appreciate you speaking to.
Well, I think you have with art in particular, you have this opportunity to bridge the gaps,
mm-hmm,
right? Because the real power of a performance, or whether it's you're seeing dance or theater or going to look at visual art, is that you have this opportunity to connect in a way with people through a shared experience.
Yeah.
So those, you know, 1,000 people who are sitting in that theater are having a shared experience. And in that shared experience, you are really in very many ways creating a sense of community and connection, mm-hmm, with each other.
And Mr. Ailey said, you know, dance, in 1958 when he created his company, mm-hmm, all of the division, all of the challenges that the country was facing, he said his company was a political statement. But it's, mm-hmm, also a statement about his dancers being uniquely them, and he wanted to see that on the concert stage. He wanted to have a concert where his family from the country or the sticks or from the cities could come to and relate to. So it was really about creating, on purpose, the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. It was about all of us. And so it was very much important that it was about the African American experience, but it was also important that it was, our experience was big enough to encompass all of America. So that when you see the school being started with him and Pearl Lang, mm-hmm, who was somebody who was very interested and instrumental in furthering his company, or Carmen de Lavallot, who was one of his dancers, or Denise Jefferson, who ran the school for many years, there are many women that also supported, mm-hmm, the vision and the efforts of the organization. And that, I think, is very important.
Yeah. Fantastic. Can you talk to us about some of the Harlan... Sue Ellen mentioned that there are conversations that you have some conversations periodically that take place.
Right,
can
part
you
of
speak
the symposium.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the symposium program, in fact, the next one coming up will be November 10th. The symposium program is really about facilitating and leading a dialogue around race, place, and diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that when we are engaged in those conversations and when we're engaged in dialogue and we're sharing our experiences, we build understanding with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we need to keep that conversation alive.
Mm-hmm.
There's great value in that dialogue. There's great value in speaking about our own personal experiences. I've attended a number of them, and in listening to those conversations, you hear about people's experiences of things that you may never have experienced yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it begins to generate a greater sense of what is the experience of other people, and I would say to you, really creates a certain sense of empathy and connection with others in the community. That makes a huge difference, and it also enlightens people. There were people I know at one particular symposium that I attended where an individual got up and made a statement and said basically that they had never considered that point of view or never considered that person's experience, mm-hmm, of what they were going through day in and day out. I think we often think that we know what it feels like to be in someone else's skin, but the truth of the matter is we many times just simply don't.
Mm-hmm.
So to acknowledge that we don't, but that we're willing to try to find out and we're willing to try to understand the best that we can,
mm-hmm,
I think is a really important part of our learning how to come together and learning how to find ways to to bridge the gaps that we find sometimes that differentiate us from each other. You know, I often think about the work of Maya Angelou, who said we're more alike than we are unlike. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. We really, truly are. And so we're looking for those places in that conversation to find out what are the things that we share together. Mm-hmm. And it is in that conversation, and it is our mission to really position ourselves to take the lead, because mm-hmm. we've had that experience institutionally. Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey has been around for 32 years. Mm-hmm. There's some experience there, and there's some expertise to be able to say, here's what we've learned, here's what we understand, and let us share that with you so that that can then perpetuate throughout the community.
Yeah.
And for me, it really is about difference and why difference matters, mm-hmm. and why when you hear a point of view or perspective, mm-hmm. that it can inform you and your worldview mm-hmm. about how our community, how Kansas City, how we come together and how we fracture and break apart. Mm-hmm. So it really is about creating a platform for people to share why difference matters, and why when we can share that frankly and honestly, there is a way to develop strategies so that there is a strengthening of the fabric mm-hmm. so that if there is tension in the community that arises because of challenges that we have around race issues, around sexual orientation issues, around other issues, there is a way to look through that communication that we're having that's ongoing mm-hmm. to come up with solutions that work for our community.
Yeah. And it's really very much, I would say to you, to embrace the differences is really to an act of courage. But to be deliberate about that, to say, I will step out of where I'm comfortable. I will become courageous in embracing differences and recognizing mm-hmm. difference. And I think for a lot of people that can be very, very scary.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what needs to happen. We need to be able to have the courage to embrace the differences that we experience with each other.
How have you, just given both of your professional backgrounds in the arts, how have you seen that play out in your own dance careers, where you maybe have embraced other differences as far as choreography, as far as, you know, expression of art, and at the same time embraced your own, and at the same time saw where you were the one and the same?
Well, I would say to you that in general, I think many artists are perhaps more tolerant in some ways. I think mm-hmm. you, and I know that may sound a little bit stereotypical that, but I do believe that there is more room in many communities, artistic communities, to embrace difference. And in fact, mm-hmm. people are looking for differences. They're trying to find a way to differentiate themselves in some way. I think for me, one of the most powerful ways that I've experienced this idea of inclusion and diversity has really been around how I have become more and more sensitive and aware of how we learn about where our place is in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that, particularly in my experience with Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey, I've become more aware of what are all the ways that I understand where I belong in the world and where my mm-hmm. place is mm-hmm. and all the ways that I'm told about where I don't belong mm-hmm. and whether or not I accept that or whether I challenge that. And I think for me personally, that's been a part of this, but I think there's a larger issue for the community about that conversation around how we discover where we belong and mm-hmm. where and how we come to either accept that or to challenge that. But I think that's a critical piece of this conversation, and I think in particular with art, and as I look at the arts in general, I really do see that the arts are this place that help bring us together around those conversations.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's often been about resource and also about history. And so when you look at minority organizations, including arts organizations, and that's where I spent my life, mm-hmm. I've been with Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey for 22 years. Mm-hmm. Part of the challenge has been we've been under-resourced. Mm-hmm. Our first symposium, we brought in three founding directors of dance companies from around the United States, mm-hmm. and they talked about the quality of their work, the commitment and passion they have to the arts, but how regularly they've come up short when it came to funding or acceptance because of their minority status. Mm-hmm. Now, that impacts us when we look at overall trends, mm-hmm. where minority arts organizations are on the decline, mm-hmm. and also where you have situations where, in terms of funding, there's only one minority arts institution that has a budget of over $5 million in the United States, and that's the Albany American Dance Theater, based in New York. Other than that, there's a great deal of struggle. So it really is about trying to find ways to create parity, ways to create access, mm-hmm. ways to talk about why there is not just the status quo that's important, mm-hmm. but in a changing world and in a changing environment, mm-hmm. there needs to be greater access and greater inclusion for mm-hmm. all people.
Mm-hmm. And that's how you, when you talk about one's own sense of value, right, mm-hmm. and you look at those kind of statistics, you begin to understand in a deeper way those messages that were told in and out through our, you know, our day and our lives as artists and as arts organizations.
Yeah, I'm a just as a side, I'm one of the facilitators at a new organization called Gilded, and it's a, well, we're seeking to be a nonprofit eventually, but we facilitate conversations among artists and the community around the business of art. We have a panel coming up called Making Money in the Arts, and it is in listening to a number of the artists present, it is, you know, money can be a touchy subject. Some people are like, well, I don't care about money. And then others talk about how, no, I make an important decision to say, you know, every what you do is of value and I'm going to pay you for your work. And but it's an interesting conversation to say, okay, I feel strongly about being a dancer, I feel strongly about being a poet, or, you know, what have you, but how can I make a living at doing this? Even though it's something that I definitely feel is that I'm, you know, meant to do. So it can be a touchy subject, but I do think it goes back to your point about value and what we value for ourselves. And when something is missing, I think kind of that phrase of, you don't know what you have until it's gone, or how good it is until it's gone. If we don't dance, or if we don't have music, or if we don't have words that move us, we really feel the effects of that. And I think we're feeling that, you know, in a lot of ways now too. So,
no, we definitely know that there's always the need to continue to support the arts. I mean, that's an important part. And we certainly are one of those organizations that's looking to be supported, because we think the mission, as Tyrone talked about, that's an important mission that we serve in this community. We are clearly making a difference, and especially the children that we work with, and watching them change and transform and come into their own as individuals, regardless of whether they become dancers or not.
Yeah.
It's very powerful. It's moving in so many ways, and we're making a difference.
We also have wonderful opportunities for people to engage with us, both at our studio in the 18th and Vine Jazz District, but also we regularly have performances at the Gym Theater that are open and free to the public that allow them to have access to programming that is food for the soul, really.
Yeah. Can you give out a contact information for Alvin Ailey in Kansas City and in any upcoming events, especially the one November 10th?
Mm-hmm. You can definitely find us on the web at www.kcfaa.org. You can call us at 816-471-6003, or you can email us at info@kcfaa.org, and those are wonderful ways to get in touch with us, and we'll make sure we respond immediately with you.
Okay. We have our upcoming performances of Ailey 2 at the
Folly Theater.
Thank you. That will be on September 29th. We also have our gala on the 30th, and then we have performances on Saturday, October 1st as well.
Okay, fantastic. And then you said the next symposium, the conversation, is November 10th.
November 10th.
November 10th. And where will that be located?
It will be in the Jazz District.
Okay, in the Jazz District. And do people just come and do they need to RSVP?
Or? They need to go online, find out more information about it.
Okay.
It'll tell you cost. There are part of it that there's a charge for during the day, during the panels, and there's also a community town hall in the evening that's free of charge.
And we're also doing the First Fridays on the Vine now as well.
Oh, okay.
Right. So on First Friday, which will be coming up here in another, next week, right?
Yeah, next week.
We will be, our offices will be open in the evening. People are welcome to come by and visit and learn more about what we do.
And we'll have some hip-hop clinics on the half hour starting at 5:30, so 5:30, 6:30, 7:30, 8:30. You can come and take a 20-minute workshop on hip-hop and learn some about it.
And they've got the bridge bus that's running back and forth between the Crossroads and the Jazz District. Okay. And parking is plentiful, actually, over at the old Attic School parking lot, so people can start there for their Friday night, visit some of the organizations along 18th and Vine and District there, and then head on over to the Crossroads if they want.
Fantastic. One more time for that website address, so if people want to sign up for things.
www.kcfaa.org.
Thank you so much, Harlan and Tyrone. We appreciate you coming on to discuss Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey and take out some time in your Saturday to share with our audience.
Thanks for having us here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. This is the Every Woman Show. We will be right back.
Media Kansas City, in partnership with Bird Productions, presents The Treasure of the Golden Monkey King. This production will premiere at this year's Kansas City Fringe Festival. Six performances presented at the Unicorn's Jerome Stage. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.kcfringe.org. 20% of all ticket sales will go to support KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City's community radio.
Jaws of Justice Radio investigates how we can achieve justice from a system of laws deeply rooted in economic, political, and social inequality. We strive to dispel misconceptions created by the news and entertainment industries, as well as the fear-mongering of the political system. Listen in as we search out the tools needed to make our community a more just environment. Jaws of Justice Radio, Mondays at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
We're back on the air with Hector Lugo, who is probably, he'll have to correct me, founder or certainly a member of the 10th Dimension Paranormal Group, which is having an event that he's going to tell us about, and we have some tickets to give away. So we'll try to take phone calls and give out some tickets to this event coming up. Welcome, Hector.
Thank you.
Your group, you've had more people come with you in the past. I understand somebody stuck at the airport that was planning to come with you today.
Right. We've been so busy with it. We've done like three other radio interviews, and we got Channel 4 coming up, and we also have Night Watch this week. What we're promoting is the annual Kansas City Paracon event that we hold every year. This is our fifth year. And Jason Kupsick and I have become partners in this, and we've got incredible speakers from all over the United States. I mean, they're flying in. They're coming from Maryland. They're coming from California, Texas, Colorado, and it's just an awesome event.
And, of course, we can't talk about price, even though you don't expect to do anything but perhaps recover your cost, if you're lucky, on the whole thing. But we do have some tickets that we want to offer our listeners to call in. I don't know. Have you decided how many you want to?
We can give away up to five sets of tickets if you like.
Five times two.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that would be great. And hopefully Ebony will be able to answer the telephone, and I guess we could just take their phone number and call them back after the show, perhaps. Does that sound like a workable deal?
Yes, and if you are listening, just call 816-931-5534.
And is this your third annual Paracon?
This is our fifth.
Your fifth annual. Okay.
Yeah. And this year we have quite a few really awesome sponsors, like Big Rip. It's a new brewery down in North Kansas City. We have Matt Ford. We have Inkland Bookstore. Of course, we got like four or five others. I can go on. And
You also have Every Woman supporting
exactly.
you.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to let you say that.
Every Woman at KKFI is supporting the Paracon. And tell us when that's going to be and where.
It's going to be, I'll tell you the exact address. It's Mike Anka Memorial Hall, and it's 11520 Putnam Street, Independence, Missouri. And it's Saturday and Sunday. Doors open at 9 a.m., and they close like at 10. That's Saturday and Sunday. But Saturday night, we're having a very special event. It's an actual ghost hunt, and people can buy tickets there at the event. And the money goes to the Sugar Creek City that's sponsoring us, that actually set this up with us. they're having problems getting money for their little league uniforms for the kids. So they mentioned that, and we thought, wow, that's a good event to raise money. So we're going to do the ghost hunt, the funds. Hopefully we'll go towards the little
Sugar
league.
Creek Little
yeah,
Leagues.
Right, to
yeah.
help them out.
Now, is this center down in the park where they host the Slavic.
Yeah.
Thank you. Is that where the...
Almost the exact same spot where they started, yes.
Okay, so that's where the event will be.
Right.
That is a very nice location.
Oh, yeah, it's a nice hall. I mean, we're sold out. Vendors are all sold out. We have 15. We had 16 speakers. One of the speakers canceled.
You have how many speakers?
15.
Okay.
Yeah, one. We did have 16, but one passed away. Father passed away, so he had to cancel.
Okay.
We got another one that hopefully driving or flying up from Florida to replace him.
Well, what are some of the topics that'll be the speakers will be talking about?
Well, to give you an idea, Antonio Perez. He's a professor at one of the universities down in Florida, St. Petersburg, and on astrology. He's actually on the NASA program. I don't have the specific details, but he's working with NASA and going to have some information. He usually works on UFOs and stuff like that. Then we have Larry Flagman. He's written 8 books on different subjects like cryptozoology. We have like Chris Sutton. He's done numerous projects investigating, and he's been doing it for over 23 years. We got Gene Walker, who worked for MUFON here in the state of Missouri. We got a couple like Rob Garcia from KC Elite. He's one of the investigators. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have Todd Sheets. I think you know him, Night Watch Radio.
Oh, yeah.
He just got back from LA. They just produced 2 movies down there. He's a producer, and he's going to be on our panel speaking Saturday and Sunday. And then we have Rick, forget Rick's last name now, Rick Rhodes. He's also doing productions with Josh Hurd and Jason. He's going to come in and be on the panel. Then we got, like I said, tons of Heather Hunter. She's coming out of Colorado. She's got her own TV show. And she's, I don't know if you know how John Edwards does his show, where he has an audience and they do readings. That's what she does. Huh. And she's going to be there doing that. And we're just excited. This year has really been incredible as far as we've actually turned away 12 different speakers and already set it for next year.
Well, I was there last year, and you had also people who came, and they had, I guess that would be your vendors, where they did Reiki and,
right.
and foot massage and massage and chakra. All those people will be there too, and they, of course, are will be separate.
Right,
charge for
right.
Their,
they, all they the do. Vendors do their own charge and stuff. I mean, they pay a flat fee to be there, and that money goes to paying the speakers or setting up, you know, whatever we need to do. But you know, for people that are interested and want to get more information, you can go to KansasCityParacon.net. And it has all the information about the speakers, about the schedule, the prices, and the dates and times and speakers.
And you spell out KansasCityParacon.net.
Right. You spell it out. It's not KC. It's Kansas City. And what we try to do is make sure that everybody comes. And when you come in, we also have raffle. You can buy raffle tickets and win prizes.
Oh, that's right. The vendors have things that they're
donating. And we got food. We're going to have food there. We're going to have beverages like Big Rip is a beer brewery.
Uh-huh.
They're going to be selling alcohol there, the beer.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, we'll have it's got a kitchen, so you can buy freshly cooked food, hamburgers, hot dogs, sausages, salads, drinks. So it's all there.
And we how many tickets have we given away?
We have given away 2 tickets, Robin Rice and Vicki Rogers.
Okay, that's one set then, just 2 or 2 pair? I mean, because we have 10 total.
Okay,
5 times 2.
So 2 pairs. So Robin and Vicki, if you're listening, you have a pair. I took their information, so we'll give them a call back with
details. Okay, and so we have 4 more pairs of tickets?
There's 2 different people called in, right?
Yes, 2 different people called in.
Okay. Yes,
so
we have 3
more.
Sorry,
I didn't. Yeah. 2 different people called in.
Yeah, so we have 3 more sets of tickets at 816-931-5534 to the Kansas City Paracon.
Yeah, and these tickets are good for either day, either Saturday or Sunday.
Both days.
Or both days. I mean, look at the schedule and see who you like or what you're interested in and come those days.
And for people who are just tuning in, can you tell us what Paracon, just tell us a little bit about it again. This is actually my first time hearing about it through Sharon. So if they're just tuning in and saying, what are they talking about, Paracon? Can you tell us?
I have to tell you, I believe in UFOs. I cannot ever imagine that we are the only beings on this, in this universe or multi-universe or whatever it is. Yes. I believe in very many things, supernatural, unnatural. Mm-hmm. I believe there are things we cannot explain, mm-hmm. that we don't understand, that mm-hmm. we cannot see. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of my definition of paranormal.
Right, and that's what the Paracon's all about. We bring in people. See, Kansas City, you look at the schedule across the United States, New York, Chicago, L.A., and all them, they have big Paracons. They just had the comic Paracon down in L.A. Mm-hmm. Well, we're on that same plateau. We're bringing in people for Kansas City to get together and attend and see these speakers. I mean, you see these people on TV, you hear about them, read their books. Well, we're bringing them here to Kansas City so people can actually go up and ask questions, get some answers. I mean, these people actually go out there and do the footwork for us, and they share the information. Mm-hmm. We bring them in so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel, per se. Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that are wanting to jump into this field, whether it be cryptozoology, Bigfoot, UFO, or paranormal, ghost hunting. You have to start somewhere. And a good place to start is to learn about it at these conferences, how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yes, a little bit. I'm still interested in what, when I go, so for instance, if I'm a first timer and I don't know, have any real working background or knowledge, if I, when I go to this conference, I can expect what?
You're going to walk, when you walk in, there's a stage.
Yeah.
And on that stage, and there's going to be like a couple hundred seats and about 25 tables and bunch of vendors and stuff.
Okay.
And there'll be speakers up on the stage with their overhead projection, their videos, their movies or whatever, and they'll be talking about their particular field. Bigfoot, for example.
Okay.
Scott Nelson. He's been investigating Bigfoot for over 30-some years, and he's been on national TV and all that, so he'll be talking for an hour on that subject. Then there may be Gene Walker. Next subject, UFOs. And the crowd changes. Mm-hmm. When somebody says, UFO, the people from UFO move up to the front, you know, the people Bigfoot move back. Same with ghosts. It's just what your field of interest is. And we have a schedule, so you know when to get there and be ready.
Yeah. So if I want to hear about ghosts or UFOs and what's going on other planets and that sort of, or and even history-related thing items, you know, when people talk from, like, I was just watching something on the, I don't know if it was the Sci-Fi Channel or the History Channel, and they just spoke about just some of the architecture and the big stones and how was it humanly possible for them to actually move those huge stones and make those shapes the way that they did. They had to use something else had to be going on. So
yeah, and that sounds like you watch Ancient Alien program.
Okay.
But what it is these speakers, and all these speakers are very well versed. They're very well experienced in what in their field. We do research to make sure that they are what we believe them for them to be. And they'll come out and they have tables. They sell their books. They'll sign them for you. They have their CDs. You can ask questions. Somebody might come up and say, okay, I had a life after death experience. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me a little more about how that works? And, you know, we have speakers on that. We have UFO, Bigfoot encounters. And, you know, the guy coming from Florida, he's been hunting Bigfoot for years and years. And he happened to be in Oklahoma. He called me today. And he asked if he can come up to the conference. And I'm like, yeah. Come on, you know, it's just like, it is what it is. It's cool. It really is.
You are listening to the Every Woman Show, and we are talking about paranormal activity, or real, actually, Paracon, Kansas City. We are going to take a break and come right back, but we do still have tickets to give away to the KC Paracon Conference that's coming up next Saturday, August 6th. You can call the studio at 816-931-5534. Again, that number is 816-931-5534. We're going to take a station break and we'll be right back.
This week, we're talking to uber atheist Sam Harris. These days, he's embracing spirituality, but he still thinks religion is the root of all evil.
People who are absolutely sure of paradise and absolutely sure that there's one way to get there are not, you know, part of your audience. And that's those are the people I'm really worried about.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after your Fusion Funkmeister.
Hey, it's Junebug, and it's time for another Blues Kitchen Live. I'm calling all you blues kitcheners and kitchenettes to come out to BB's Lawnside Barbecue on Saturday morning, August 13th, for live music and live radio. Music runs from 8 to 11 a.m. with the Voodoo Fix from Nashville.
Teacher, ask me what you want to be. All I know is I want to be free. I wasn't born to stand in line.
Plus, Scotty and the Soul Tones. Make sure to get your tickets early at kkfi.org/events. This KKFI benefit is all going down at BB's Lawnside Barbecue on Saturday, August 13th from 8 to 11 a.m. We'll see you there.
I was just asking our guest Hector Lugo with the 10th Dimension Paranormal Group what cryptozoology was.
That covers the field. You know, you have the UFO, you have the Bigfoot, and it covers all that.
Yeah, okay.
But there's other mythical creatures like the chupacabra, things like that that are out there and people have questions about. And it actually started in Puerto Rico and has evolved somehow. It's come to the United States, Texas, witches, stuff like that, and that's what they cover.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds we're very busy with this phone calls on these tickets for this event. I attended last year and really enjoyed myself, and I enjoyed the vendors, too. I think I had 2 foot massages, reflexology. That was it. Oh, my God, it was wonderful. And but let's talk a little bit about how we got connected with you. Somehow, I think my daughter met one of the women that's in the group, and we've had you on the show a couple of times prior to this. I actually have attended a ghost, I don't know, you call it ghost hunt?
Investigation.
Ghost what?
Investigation.
Investigation at the Sugar Creek Gym, which is an old gymnasium that's no longer really in use. And you set up all this elaborate electronic equipment, and I've seen the action of lights bouncing. I don't know where this light is coming from. These little light balls, like, what do you call those? Orbs. Like orbs,
right,
are moving around in this gym. And I know until I saw it, I wouldn't have believed it. And then the thing that most impressed me is how you're talking to these spirits that are in the room and ask them questions to answer yes or no. And for somehow across the room, there's a flashlight or scattered around the room, and a flashlight will come on and blink once for yes or twice for no. I just cannot grasp how that can happen.
Yeah, and that was, you know, I was with you when we were doing that, and I said, come on down, and, you know, at the time I think you just had surgery, so
I
was coming down the stairs.
One of my knees replaced.
So, yes, we isolated it to that particular area, so you had to go so far, and we, by chance, saw that light come down the hall and back off, and then all of a sudden the flashlight started going on and off when we asked questions, and it was really, but, you know, that gym has always been very active. I mean, it has been for years, and we've been there for 2 years now, and I'm just letting the people know that when they come to that ghost hunt, that tour that Saturday night, that we can't promise or guarantee that spirits are going to cooperate, but it hadn't failed yet in that gym. Flashlights do come on and off, and the first thing we want to do is make sure that we have nothing in our hands. People say, oh, that's remote control or
right,
whatever.
I know.
But there's no
Everybody
nothing.
Always tells me that, but I was there and I saw it, and I just couldn't believe it. And that number to call, we still have...
We have 2 more people, so we have a total of 4 sets that we've given away. So we have
one
left.
Set of tickets.
So 816-931-5534 if you would like to attend the Paracon Conference next weekend, August 6th or 7th. Or you can either go 6th and 7th. Okay.
And every woman is a sponsor of that because... we just believe in things that can't be explained.
Yes. We are every woman.
Yeah. We appreciate that. And we've actually got 12 speakers for next year already. I mean, we've turned away quite a few speakers.
Oh, you turn away? So how do you talk to me about the vetting process for these speakers? And just so that they're, because you know this is a bit of a skeptical subject.
Exactly.
So how do you vet the people that are coming to speak to make sure the information that they are delivering to the audience is as authentic as possible?
Well, we have actually with Jason and myself, he has the Mid-Continent Paranormal Group and I have the 10th Dimension Paranormal Group, and we have members in our group, Viv, Diana, who's in charge of our Kansas City branch. They're excellent at picking out and saying, okay, this person, the same with Jason. These people, we do research, we check, we talk to other groups around the area in that location. We do research on whatever video or book they've written and make sure that it is on the up and up. I mean, what we don't want is somebody misrepresenting what we do. I mean, these people coming in here with good intent and good faith to present the subject, you know, topic that we want to address. We want to make sure that we get somebody that's really credible in dealing with this. If we find that somebody is trying to hoodwink us, we're not going to invite them to come in. And if they come in and don't do what we think they should do, we just move on to another speaker for the following year.
And last year you had a Native American, and you do again this year.
Yes, Ed Green. He's from he's Lakota. He's coming from South Dakota. Actually, he stays at Mayetta, right above Topeka, at the Potawatomi Reservation.
Now, he wasn't the same one that was here last year,
yes,
or is he?
Yes, he's the same one. Okay. He was so good. Everybody wanted him back. So we did bring him back, and he speaks about spiritual Indian beliefs and about how they deal with the paranormal. He was an excellent speaker. And then we got Mike Diamond coming in from New Jersey, New York area. And he's the owner, one of the co-owners of a paranormal warehouse, which is, when he first started, it was his first conference. And 5 years later, he's worldwide. And he's coming down with his friends, and it's become a tradition with them.
We still have one set left.
So
816-931-5534. And you better make it quick because Donna's in the house.
And I'd just like to congratulate Robin Rice, Vicki Rogers, Rhonda Enzina, and Nicole Nelson. Those ladies called in, and they have won a pair of tickets to the Paracon conference.
See, it's always the women. It's always the women.
You know, it is true in the field, too. Most of the people that have the abilities or intuitive are the women.
Really?
But most of the founders of the groups are men. I don't understand that.
Oh, please. We understand that. We can tell you about that. But, it looks like we've got another set of tickets to give away. And stay tuned. Thank you, Hector Lugo, 10th Dimension Paranormal Group, for coming down and sharing your tickets with the Every Woman audience and the KKFI audience. And we will be clearing out of here pretty quickly for Donna Wolf with Urban Connections, followed by MC Richardson with Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City. And our engineer and co-host Ebony is on the phone taking down phone numbers. And that's next Saturday. Tell us where that's going to be again.
It's going to be at the Sugar Creek. Actually, it's Mike Anka Hall in Sugar Creek, Missouri. And the address is 11520 Putnam Street. Come on and join us.
And that's kind of, you go to all the way to the end of Sterling, is it?
Right, you go to Sterling or Kentucky, it turns into Kentucky.
It turns into Kentucky, and it's almost all the way to the end, and then there'll be a sign to direct them to the park.
Right, you just use a GPS or, you know, MapQuest it, and we'll have little signs put up to help you if you, but it's easy to find. It really is pretty easy to find.
Okay, and we did just give away that last pair of tickets to Tony Kollar. So all women.
Now was Tony. Well, there
and
you
she's
go.
A win. She was a win as a woman.
Now this, Brett, begs the question, why when we open our phone lines for women to call in, is it men that call in? I'm going to challenge those five women that got those tickets. Next time we open our phone lines, we want to hear from them.
Yeah.
We want to hear your opinions and comments on the air. Not that we mind having the men call in. But anyway, in fact, today our show was all men, for heaven's sake.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? Huh.
Yes, it was. So Hector Lugo, 10th Dimension Paranormal Group, thank you so much for coming and sharing about your Paracon and giving us tickets to give away to our listeners.
Well, thank you for having us, and thank you for being a sponsor. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I think, are we going to end the show with a new song today?
We are. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend.